connecting to the internet.
Internet.
Networking software.
World Wide Web for web.
Computer today.
Computer.
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 NetSurfer Pro.
So, bit of a surprise. I just moved in my chair. I really got to be careful not to move in my chair too much. We have squeaky chairs over here. And I say we because we are actually recording in the same room for once.
Yes.
For the first once.
So this is our first time meeting in person ever, actually.
Yes, we've lived like 30 minutes away our whole lives but never seen each other. It's a real two ships moment.
Yeah, you know that story about the guy who has a harmonica and he sells it to buy a clip for his wife, but his wife lives 30 minutes away and they've never actually met?
Yeah, and then they both get on trains, and the trains are heading in the same direction. One of them leaves at 8:30 in the morning, the other leaves at 9. They both have 8 pence for which they can buy 8 spiders.
But you can't put the wife, the husband, and the paperclip onto the train at the same time, because the wife will eat the paperclip, but the husband will eat the wife.
Yes. Also, God, there's too many good riddles to choose from.
So yes, this is the first episode of In-Person NetSurfer Pro, a whirlwind ride through the World Wide Web. I am your co-host, Galen, and with me, as always, is...
your host, Matt, and I'm also the host, as in the host of him, because this is my house, my rules. The first rule of which is, we talk about movies. It is Lonely Jalisland, which means it is July, and we're talking about the Lonely Island. This might become the lonely... How would August fit?
Lonely Julaugust.
That Julaug... Okay, sure. Lonely Julaugust. Because we've had some setbacks here. There's a big storm. It was a whole thing. But now the only storm is the storm of episodes we're going to release talking about the Lonely Island, the works of the trio consisting of Andy Samberg, Yorma Taccone, and Akiva Schaffer. And so last week, we talked about sort of their general work as a whole, sort of getting the oeuvre of them. We talked about like their music and their shorts. But now we're going to talk about movies, because they have technically 4 movies now under their belt. We're only going to talk about 3, and we're talking about the first one today, which is Hot Rod.
Yeah, if we talk about all 4, this would probably extend into Lonely Julogtember.
Julogtober. So. Ember, right, yeah.
but yes, today we are talking about the pretty... I want to say this is a cult hit, probably. I don't actually know any stats about it, but it seems like this would be a bit more of a niche hit of Hot Rod.
Right, so this movie was originally written by Pam Brady as a Will Ferrell vehicle.
Oh, wait, hang on. Is this the fact corner?
Oh, yes, we're in the fact corner.
The fact corner.
Okay, so yeah, written by Pam Brady as a Will Ferrell vehicle. I think in the last episode I misattributed it to Will Forte, but it's Will Ferrell, the guy who was everywhere at the time. And it just kind of never panned out. Instead... Lorne Michaels eventually gave the script to The Lonely Island, thinking, like, maybe they can do something with it. And so, when they got the script, the trio did some rewrites on the script, because Andy was uncomfortable doing the exact role that was meant for Will Ferrell. You know, a lot of times with, like, these movies written for specific comedians, they'll write them for that comedian. And so, Andy didn't want to feel like he was kind of cramping Will Ferrell's style, or trying to just pretend he was him. He wanted to inject some of his own self with it. And in turn, they also wanted to add their Lonely Island flair that got them so popular. This was sort of another instance of Lorne Michaels just giving the trio some creative freedom and giving them, like, the SNL budget and being like, do whatever works. It bombed at the box office and reviewed poorly. I think currently it's around 40% on Rotten Tomatoes. But what's funny is... Andy Samberg commented that all his favorite comedies were theatrical bombs and reviewed poorly, so he's in the right place. they got a good hit there. The concept of the movie is that Andy Samberg plays a bad stuntman trying to get enough money to, what is it? Is it cancer that his dad has?
Something with his heart.
Right, he needs a heart transplant.
Oh my god, wait. We just said something at the same exact time.
Yeah, that would have never happened online.
We can actually finish each other's
bagels. I'm pretty hungry right now.
I am also pretty hungry.
Okay, so that's about it for the fact corner. There's not a whole lot of other facts, fun or otherwise, right now. There is one that I'll bring up as we get a bit further into the episode, relating to one specific scene. But yeah, it was pretty much their first, like, actual movie debut. And sort of the first time working with a theatrical length release instead of something that's around 5 to 10 minutes. So I guess let's just do like a quick sort of more general plot summary, less general plot summary. It should be noted that Andy Samberg and Yorma star in this movie, and Akiva Schaffer was the director of the movie. So this was his, like, directorial credit, while the other two were actors.
Yeah, I think Akiva Schaffer shows up a couple of times, but not as a named character or anything.
Yeah, he is a named character. It's, what is it? It's Dave's friend. He has a specific name. Derek, yes, right. Dave's friend Derek. Hot Rod stars Andy Samberg playing Rod. I don't remember his last name.
Rod is all you need to know.
Yes. He is the half-brother of Kevin, played by Yorma Taccone, who his dad, which is Rod's stepdad, fights Rod. They have, like, this arrangement where Rod's stepdad won't recognize him as a man unless he beats him in a fight. Unless Rod beats his stepdad in a fight. And, you know, they're kind of going through their regular routine. You learn that Rod wants to be a stuntman because his biological father was a stuntman, and he has the friends he has friend Dave, played by Bill Hader, and Rico, played by
Danny McBride.
Yes, Danny McBride. And so they go around kind of trying to do cool stunts and just hanging out. And you meet also Andy Samberg's love interest, Denise, who is his neighbor. And so the group, which is formerly known as the crew, they try a lot of stunts. They just see, like, I think the first scene is Andy Samberg trying to, like, do something on his bike, like do a flip or something, or go off a ramp, and the ramp breaks. I think it's like ramping over a car or something.
Yeah, he's trying to ramp over a car, and, like, you know, he looks to his crew and it's like, you know, you filming, you know, is it structurally sound? And then he's like, all right, let's do this. And he goes forward and the ramp just breaks and he eats it.
Yeah. So they learn that Rod's dad has some sort of affliction, that he pretty much has like a terminal prognosis unless he can get a heart transplant. But they don't have the money to get a heart transplant. And Rod feels like he wants to save his stepdad because he wants to beat him in a fight. Or else he'll never become a true man or something.
Yeah.
So they work on gathering money. And at first, their goal is to, like, basically get Rod well known as a stuntman and then do a big stunt jump to raise money.
Yeah, the initial goal is, like, about $5,000, I think, to just sort of get the name out there and get the, you know, location and stuff. And then once there, the idea is that, you know, donations will flow in after this super cool stunt.
Yes. Yeah, they do like a telethon. And so much of the movie then is Rod practicing his stunts, being like a small-time stuntman, doing like parties and gatherings, and eventually getting the $5,000 together. At which point they make a trailer, like an online trailer, to show, like, Rod off, you know, to advertise. They show it in a theater, and everybody starts laughing at him. And Rod thinks he's, like, super cool and super good at a stuntman. But when he sees everyone laughing, he gets super upset and throws the projector out the window, which breaks a car and costs all $5,000 they've arranged. And then I think it's, like, his story becomes a nationally known, or no, it's that somebody sees the trailer online and wants to sponsor the jump because they like his cause and his gumption.
Yeah. The sponsor is a like AM radio host who basically wants to sponsor the event so that it can be broadcast exclusively over AM radio, so people take AM radio seriously again.
Yes, played by Chris Parnell, by the way. So they actually get the event set up, they raise the money successfully, and they get the heart transplant for Rod's stepdad. And in the final scene, he beats him in a fight at a barbecue. It's a pretty quick plot summary. There's not a whole lot of, like, twists and turns. Denise has a boyfriend played by Will Arnett.
Did we introduce who Denise was?
Yeah, Denise is his neighbor slash love interest. And her boyfriend is, like, kind of a piece of shit frat boy type thing. Let's see, what is his name? I have it listed here. Jonathan. See, I really should have taken better notes. But so, So that's sort of the main, like, plot. There's a lot... The movie's primarily slapstick. There is a lot of slapstick jokes. I mean, it's a good setup for being a slapstick movie. Like, a bad stuntman is believable to get into these weird situations where he just takes hits. It is, So, like, it's believable that he would do things like fall down a cliff or whatever. His sort of superhuman resistance almost cartoonishly kind of helps. Like, it's a consistent thing that he somehow keeps surviving these. Yeah. And so it's not as, like, bad feeling or painful to watch, even when he's, like, lit on fire and exploded out of a, like, canopy thing, a tower. The all the side characters, for the most part, are kind of basic. They don't get a lot of depth, except for, like, Yorma, maybe. Andy Samberg's character, Rod, by far is, like, the main character who goes through growth and maturity.
Yeah.
There's a few scenes I want to mention that just kind of happened during the movie that we could get to.
Yes. So, I mean, pretty much all of my notes are just things that I want to highlight, scenes that I want to highlight because they are funny, my favorite scenes.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, if we can just start with that, I guess.
Sure, yeah. So, for one thing I want to say is that the crew is pretty funny, just, like, the idea of it. Like, they're all kind of, like, dweebs, I guess? Dorks, nerds. They're called nerds by Jonathan.
Yeah.
They're definitely not, like, powerful or anything, but there's this one guy at their public pool that really wants to join their crew.
Yeah, Richardson.
Richardson, yes. And I kind of love the idea that they're not even that, like, interesting or important, but there's one guy who desperately wants to join them.
Yeah. And who kind of gets his wish, actually.
Yeah, kind of. He does a dance for a few minutes. And that's most of what he does. There's a really well-known scene where Rod meets Denise while they're taking out the trash. And they have a little talk at night. For one thing, this reminds me a lot of the first Spider-Man movie. I wonder if that's an intentional parallel. But it just has one of the best lines in the whole movie, which is where Rod says, "You look really pretty, Denise." And she says, "What?" And he says, "I said you look shitty. Good night, Denise." It's, I think, one of the movie's main legacies is that scene in particular. Like, I've seen people that know that scene or that joke, but have not seen the movie itself.
Honestly, like, I think that Even along that line, there's two other scenes that you might know, even if you don't know the movie, which is Too Legit to Quit, where he's explaining during the, you know, the falling action, he's explaining why he isn't going to be a stuntman to Denise. And he says, like, I used to be legit, okay? And he throws up an L. And he's like, I used to be too legit. And he throws up a 2 and an L. I used to be too legit to quit. And he has more hand signs. But now I'm unlegit. And he has, like, a U and then an L. So now I must quit. And then the second one of those is the Colbean scene.
Yes.
Where
he's patching things up with Yorma after they had a bit of a falling out. Not Yorma. His brother Kevin. After they had a bit of a falling out between the movie that Kevin made, and eventually they patch it up. They're like, cool beans? Cool beans. Cool beans? Cool beans.
Cool beans.
And then it gets into, like, a little song.
Yeah.
The cool, cool beans.
Beans. Cool beans.
So, interestingly enough, that's where my other fun fact comes in, that Akiva originally cut that scene from the movie, But Yorma and Andy secretly snuck it back in for the last test screening, and it did better than they all expected, so they kept it in.
That's really good.
Yeah. It's definitely a really, really great scene. It's so this actually brings me to my first point, which is that this is peak, maybe not peak, but prime alt comedy. Alt comedy, you may have heard it before. It started with Kaufman, I would say. Andy Kaufman kind of got popularized with Tim and Eric. But it's a sort of style of comedy that is postmodern, eschewing like conventional comedic storytelling or like comedic structure or timing in favor of a more like Dadaist surrealist approach. Oftentimes it's like non sequitur focused or really extends a scene longer than you'd expect or plays off things that aren't typical setup and punchline. So the Cool Beans scene, for example, is like very alt comedy where it kind of comes out of nowhere. It doesn't really amount to much. It's just like a weird kind of funny, different twist on a saying. Another good example is the bell scene where they are at a pool in front of Dave's house. It's like an above ground pool. And they are trying to see how long Rod can hold his breath. I keep calling him Andy. How long Rod can hold his breath underwater. And they have a bell. And it's like, as soon as you need help, ring this bell. And they start ringing it a bit. And they just kind of go like, ah, ah. They keep just like making noises along with the bell. And then, of course, the rope snaps and he almost drowns. But like the point is that it's just this scene that comes from nowhere was apparently improvised. That's another fun fact.
Interesting.
But it comes from nowhere, kind of goes on for a bit, has no real setup or purpose. It's just, I don't know, random. I think there's a difference, though, between like random comedy and good random comedy.
It is random, but it's not a non sequitur.
Sure. There's also like there's like a scene where he needs to go to his quiet place. So he does this like 80s synth pop dance in a forest. Yeah. And it gets cut short because he slips and falls down a cliff.
Yeah.
And the cliff falls, another thing that lasts a long time.
Like the 80s dance scene, which I actually want to bring up another point about this, but the 80s dance scene is great because like it is played perfectly straight that he does the dancing and dances in the light and like, you know, jumps up. There's a prolonged scene where he does like flip after flip after flip. But then the falling down the hill scene is, I swear, like, I think it is exactly as long as the actual dancing scene of just him like falling down a hill, and then it cuts to like a different section of the hill and he falls down that and just continually and continually.
Yeah, I think the falling down the hill scene is what gets him the idea to like raise money for a heart transplant, because he sees a billboard at the end of it.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's the bus jump in particular. But at any rate, it's like, it's a long fall. It's still slapstick enough that it like fits with the rest of the movie's tone. But it is kind of extended for no real reason beyond just being ridiculous.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the random humor has an origin that you can kind of spot, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Hence why I say it's random, but it's not non sequitur. It's yeah. Like, the comedy in the random humor is not, like, the fact that it is out of nowhere. It is that, like, it has been set up and the punchline is now being had, but it is being extended to an extent that you would not expect. Like,
it's like when Peter Griffin trips.
Yeah, honestly, very good. It's a very good point of reference.
I mean, Family Guy does it a lot, honestly, and some of it's hit or miss, but I think a lot of their memorable ones are just something that didn't need to go on for that long, but it kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
When Peter Griffin trips, it's because it hurts a lot, and I've been in situations like that.
Yeah.
So, like, I kind of get the feeling and why it would last that long.
One point I want to specifically say is that, so, this is a movie that, time period-wise, like, this was made in 2007. This is clearly the time period of the movie is, like, late 90s, early 2000s, like, the internet is a thing, and the internet is what gives Rod sort of, like, the,
signal boost?
yeah, the signal boost to, you know, get the attention. And so, like, the internet is a thing, and it's a lot of CRTs and stuff like that. But the core of the movie is extremely 80s. I feel like that's probably because the trio are, you know, kind of older. And so I think they're millennials, but they are definitely, like, the millennials that grew up in the 80s. And so it feels very grounded in that.
Right.
From obvious comparisons like that scene to just sort of, like, you know, the general tone and structure of the whole movie.
It's very Karate Kid.
Yeah.
Of, like, a character learning to grow through a physical activity and finding, like, strength in failure.
Yeah.
There's even, like, a scene where he, like, before he does the bus jump, he, like, bows to his bike in front of a lake. It feels very, like, American kung fu movie like that.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Honestly, like, the ways that they lampoon it as well is, like, one of the scenes that I have is that before the big jump, he is, like, shirtless in a lake, and he's doing the Tai Chi that Denise taught him, and, like, a fisherman, you know, notices him and is like, whoa. And then when it cuts away and cuts back, the fisherman pours oil on him.
Yeah.
Because, like, in those scenes in 80s movies, the hero would always be extremely oily for no reason.
Yeah, and then the fisherman's, like, joining him.
Yeah.
That's a good bit of just, like, they take something that seems innocuous and rolls with it. Like, the riot scene.
Yeah.
Where they're, like, marching to the bus jump, and they're singing the song Man in the Mirror by Europe. And they it starts with just, like, the crew, Rod, Kevin, Rico, and Dave. And then, like, more people join behind them and start singing. And then
start singing along to the soundtrack,
yes.
Specifically.
Yeah. It should be noted that Rod and the rest of the crew are not singing the song. But then, as more people join, it cuts to, like, somebody holding a chair, and he tosses it through a window. And then, like, an actual riot breaks out. There's riot police shooting people. There's people making out on a burning car. There's, like, people throwing Molotovs.
And the crew, like, sort of notices it's happening and then starts, like, speed walking away from everyone.
Yeah. I love that after that, it's just them by the whole ramp setup, and Rico is holding a CRT, and he's like, it's so horrible that somebody would do that, you know? Just take something nice and turn it all south just for their own gain.
Yeah.
You know, just really cause destruction. It hampers the original message, you know? And nobody addresses his TV he's holding.
Yeah.
Nobody says anything. Yeah, there's a lot of bits like that that are just, like I said, something innocuous is played further and further, or, like, a trope is played further. Like, when Denise breaks up with Jonathan upon learning that Jonathan didn't tell her about Rod's big jump, Jonathan goes like, Babe, wait, and it kind of goes on for a bit. It does a thing where it cuts back and forth, and Denise is, like, in the same spot as before, moving again, like the approach scene in Monty Python and the Holy Grail. And that's just another case of, like, it's a trope for this kind of, like, you know, person breaking up with their bad boyfriend or whatever. It's a trope for that sort of style of movie or scene, but just played out further and further than it needs to be.
Honestly, like, the premise itself and Rod's relationship with his dad is also kind of a great, you know, like, played straight also, but also subversion, because it's, like, the whole crux of it is that he's trying to save his dad, but he is trying to save his dad so he can kick his dad's ass.
Yeah.
And, like, you expect there to be, you know, even one scene where the dad is like, you know, you are my son or whatever. And, like, there's kind of that scene, except that the dad basically explains, the only reason I'm so tough on you is because when I'm gone, you're going to be the man of the house and I need you to be ready. But, like, he still doesn't compliment his son.
Yeah.
He's still like, do the jump, pussy.
Yeah.
Basically.
You're not going to do it.
And so, like, it's a great... It's clearly a callback and, you know, an affectionate parody of that style. But obviously the twist of it is, you know, the part of the comedy where it's like, yeah, he is going this far for someone he cares about, but what he cares about is kicking his dad's ass.
Yeah. Also that in most of the movie until the very end, anytime he tries to fight his dad, he immediately loses.
Yeah.
They do a lot of build up to it too, kind of just showing his character more. I really like the acting of Rod's family, because Rod is, so I should say Andy Samberg is a super expressive actor. He's really good at playing hammy, overacted characters. If you look at his character Jake from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, it's kind of the same thing, where he often over-exaggerates expressions in, like, dialogue for comedic purposes. But because of that, the other family members don't need to be exaggerated in order to play off that. So, like, his dad is always kind of, like, it has that like, comedic twist on the trope, but his dad doesn't really do things like tell jokes or stuff like that. His mom is completely serious the whole time and like does every scene, every dramatic scene in like just the most normal way. The actress for his mom, Sissy Spacek, just does a great job at playing a normal character.
Also, I do want to specifically highlight that Frank Powell, Rod's dad, is Ian McShane, who you might know as either Tai Lung from Kung Fu Panda or Winston from the John Wick series.
Yeah. I also like, I think Yorma's acting is really good too, because he does like an awkward character really well, but for the most part he's played seriously as sort of a foil to Andy's character. Whereas, like, Rod is overacted and, like, really emotional. Yorma's kind of reserved and awkward, but is really capable. He does have funny moments. Like, when Denise first joins the crew, Rod's like, everyone tell us one fact about yourself. It's like, I'm Rod and I like to party. And then they do a whole thing where everybody says they like to party. But when it gets to Kevin, he says, I'm Rod and I like to party.
Yeah.
And so it's like, no, you're Kevin. He also has Heelys, which is consistent throughout the show, the movie. There are multiple scenes where he does Heelys. What's the word for doing a ride on a Heely? Is it a Heely?
Healing.
Healing? Yes. He does many healings.
He's a cleric.
Yes, he is Yorma the cleric.
Let me write that name down in my names for D&D
yes.
channel.
I do think it's cool, by the way, that the action that gets them notoriety on the larger scale is making a video on the internet, which parallels the Lonely Island's actual career.
Yeah, that seems to be a kind of consistent thing that, like, people who get kind of big on the, who get big on the internet and then sort of, like, have their careers thrust forward will often sort of have that scene where the character gets big on the internet or, like, uses the internet for the plot.
Yeah, it's both writing what you know and, like, kind of recognizing the power of the internet for that case.
Yeah. I think something that makes this movie sort of like live past its era, I think that at least part of the reason it was reviewed poorly is because this is definitely like a crew that went from internet videos and that style. Like, yes, they had been on SNL. But like that style then being translated to the big screen, I feel like a lot of critics basically kind of weren't ready.
Yeah.
Because, like, this was 2007, and, like, this was a script written for Will Ferrell, and this is the age of the Will Ferrell comedy or the Adam Sandler comedy. And so I feel like, you know, when you have this movie that has those, you know, jagged cuts and that, you know, has this comedy where, like, you know, one of my favorite jokes is Rod will, you know, say strength of a bottleneck dolphin. And he look and like, you know, bottleneck dolphin footage is like overlaid onto his eyes, like really choppily, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think they were sort of probably a little put off by that. But in modern times, that has aged extremely well.
Yeah, this is definitely internet era comedy that at the time wasn't released to people who spent money on movie tickets, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Something kind of weird I noticed. This movie has a weird relationship with Native American iconography.
Yeah.
It's some of the 80s blending in, But like, there's a headdress, like a feather headdress thing in Rod's garage or his room. There is, like, he does this like war chant before every fight with his stepdad.
I mean, even the like calling upon the spirits of nature is very clearly like a reference to that. I feel like that's the 80s influence.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I also feel like it's not really my place to comment on it, as I am white.
As, yeah, we are white.
We don't have the experiences to really say in one way or the other. It is just kind of weird and a little uncomfortable looking back at it. I think it's one of the things that doesn't hold up super well.
I read it as a parody of that. Like, the thing is that I read it as a parody of that style, of that, you know, like, it is very clearly, every time he uses it, blatantly, like, him not really using anything that he actually knows. But I feel like that's, I also think that, you know, you could certainly argue that's too nuanced of a joke for a movie where there's a scene where, like, a movie where there's a scene where they say cool beans in a funny manner.
Yeah. And, I mean, there is also, like, the like, martial arts influences that are kind of appropriative as well. And those I can understand more as being 80s references.
Yeah.
Like I said, Karate Kid and, like, that wave of American kung fu movies.
I actually also want to highlight, So, Denise's character isn't terrible, but I do think that, I think Denise is the weakest character because, like, think about this idea. This is a comedy movie about, a guy who is doing a sport, let's say, and he meets his love, who is someone who is obviously his love interest. What is the joke you would make? The joke you would make is she is actually really good at it, and she coaches him, and, like, she actually really likes his whatever about, like, whatever makes him weird is something she's actually super into. That's Denise. It's played 100% straight. It might just be the era that, you know, this was the era where that was sort of the female character TM. But, like, in a movie that, you know, subverts so much, I just feel like Denise is so, like, obvious of a female character in a comedy movie that, you know, she's the weakest part, I would say, of the, like, whole, like, section. She's the most aged part.
So, I think something interesting with Denise's character is the movie kind of forgets she's the love interest for a good 30 minutes. Like, so what happens is Andy is like, ah, I really love Denise. I want her to join the crew. It's one of those things where, like, he's like, Denise, I have something important to tell you. And then he sees Jonathan, and Jonathan's like, fuck off, kid boy. And so he's like, do you want to join our crew? And so she goes with it, and she hangs out with them for a good amount of time. She doesn't really, she's not presented as, like, the girl who is separate from the group. At first, the other guys are unsure, but, like, after that first scene, they're fine, and she just hangs out. She, like, helps them out with all the stunts and stuff. She participates a lot. There's not a lot of, like Rod doing it just to want to hit on Denise. Like, it feels like for a good 30 minutes of the movie, Denise is one of the crew.
Yeah.
And, I mean, of course, she does become the love interest again, and they have dates, or at least they have, like, the fake double date. And there is stuff relating to that again. But I think it's interesting how for, you know, a certain amount of time, at least, she doesn't feel like she exists solely to be the love interest. Granted, in the end, she kind of does, so it's kind of weird. It's hard to say. It's something where, like, there is a concern, I think, with writing female characters as just a guy in a female, like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
A female actor playing an otherwise male-coded character.
Yeah.
I don't think Denise is that, mainly because I think, like, as a character, she works regardless of gender.
Yeah. I don't think Denise is a bad character. I think Denise is just, like, she's that kind, she is very of the times. Like, she is not a problematic character, but she's the kind of character where, like, you know, in modern times, looking on it critically, you could say, like, I mean, this isn't bad, this isn't sexist or anything, but, like, you know, we live in an age where we want more three-dimensional female characters. We want, you know, women who are more than just the girl character in comedies. And so the fact that Denise can, you know, at certain points just sort of be that and be sort of flat as a character otherwise is, you know, it's very of the time. It's a little disappointing, but it was 2007.
I do like that she knows a move that makes a grown man crap his pants.
Yeah.
And then does that on Rod. That's a pretty good bit. Yeah.
Anyway, stepping off of our SJW cardboard box.
I actually want to go back onto the SJW cardboard box. This is my raft piece. I'm going down with this ship. Or not, because it's a raft piece. So, Lonely Island has... almost all of their work relates to masculinity. And I don't mean this as, like, I mean, they often comment on toxic masculinity. And I mean this for all of their work. Actually, I haven't seen Palm Springs, and I haven't seen... I think Pen 15 was directed by them. But this, the other movies we're watching, and a lot of their digital shorts and their songs have to deal with that. You know, we mentioned how a lot of the Lonely Island songs kind of punch at themselves. Like the We're Back, which is about them having small penises.
Yeah.
This movie has a really interesting relationship because there is a running theme of how, especially Andy Samberg's characters, have toxic masculine traits or beliefs, but he doesn't act like a masculine character, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't want to say that in like a stereotypical degrading way or anything. I think that's fine, but I think a lot of his characters' arcs are about coming to terms with not being the ideal peak manly man.
Yeah, like, I mean, so using this movie as an example, the height of masculinity to Rod is his father, is being the stuntman, and the, like, the...
Or you know, his stepdad who beats him in a fight every day.
Yeah, like, his goal is to be the man who can kick his stepdad's ass and can live up to his old dad's name. Old dad.
Yeah.
And so, like, the conflict is, one, he wants to kick his stepdad's ass, but also, two, he wants to be, you know, an excellent stuntman, and he sucks at it. He's just a bad stuntman. He gets laughed at constantly. I don't think he makes a single trick. And so, like, it's clearly sort of poking fun at, you know, that ideal. Like, it's clearly showing the tension between that. But the ultimate, much like you said, sort of the ultimate overcoming of the stuntman arc is that he, you know, like, just sort of finds comfort in not being a great stuntman. Like, that's what gets him his fame. You know, that's what, like, gets him the money to save his dad, because, you know, the donations stop just as he's about to do the stunt and he bombs it horribly, but then he, you know, gets back up. And I feel, and like, the fact that he then kicks his stepdad's ass, I feel like it's sort of an acknowledgement of, like, you know, yeah, he's not the perfect stuntman, he is not the uber-masculine man, but he is his own form of masculinity, and that is just as valid.
Right. It's also worth noting that the, like, the big twist in the movie is that his bio-dad wasn't a stuntman, he was just a cashier that happened to take a picture with Evel Knievel one time, whereas Rod thought that he was, like, the guy who tested Evel Knievel's stunts to make sure they were safe. And so Rod has this whole, like, identity crisis because he feels like he wanted to be a stuntman to live up to his bio father's legacy or whatever, you know, pass the torch. And when he realizes that his bio dad didn't have this hyper-masculine job, it feels like a sort of betrayal of his core beliefs. And again, the catharsis he has isn't only just, like, it's okay if he's bad at it. It's that his hobby is being a stuntman. He doesn't need to carry on his, like, father's tradition. It doesn't matter what his bio dad was or who his stepdad is. It's about his own person and his own life, I guess.
Yeah.
Whereas previously it's that sort of, like, family legacy, the bloodline, whatever.
Yeah. You don't need to live up to your father's name. You need to find what interests you and do it.
Yeah. And also, like, it's interesting because Jonathan is this, like, toxic masculine frat bro. Like, he sees one of his, like, friends from college or whatever, while he, Denise, and Rod are at a restaurant. And he goes over, he talks to his friend, he's like, bro, I haven't seen you in a while, bro! And they chest bump. And then, like, they look over a few minutes later, and it shows him, like, hitting on a girl at a bar. So Jonathan's clearly the toxic masculine foil to Rod's, like, I don't know, more emotional self, more self-actualized self, sincerity.
That's sincere.
And when Jonathan asks, you know, why do you hang out with those nerds? And Denise says, like, I like those nerds. I think that's sort of the director trying to be like, sincerity is cool. Being a hyper frat bro is not.
Yeah.
And again, so Rod finishes the movie without completing a single stunt successfully. He never completes a stunt. The bus jump goes poorly. He breaks some ribs. He crashes. But people give him money anyways. And you know, he gets up. He's alive. He's safe. Everybody's cheering for him. It's that, like, he didn't need to successfully do the stunt to be appreciated, I guess. That people liked his efforts and his struggles. Which is, I think John Lasseter said that. We like our heroes for their struggles, not for their successes. And other than beating his stepdad at the end of the movie, he doesn't get a single success in, like, terms of what he wants to set out to do. But he is better off for it. And I think the agreement or the recognition that you don't have to win at everything is what's sort of healthy about it.
Yeah. I only have a couple more, like, specific scenes that I want to highlight, mostly as this was funny.
Mm-hmm.
Less so getting into the brass tacks. I do really like, so when Denise meets up just before he does the stunt, they have a kiss, and, like, Denise goes in for, like, full movie kiss, and, Rod goes in for, you know, the peck. Mm-hmm. And so, like, he, you know, pushes her away after a moment, and she's like, no, what's wrong? And he's like, no, it's great. It's just, like, you're, you know, full mouth, like, you know, it was weird. And Denise is kind of like, oh.
Yeah, they did not synchronize it.
Yeah.
I also love, so Chris Parnell, who, again, was a previous collaborator with Lonely Island, much like Bill Hader, he plays the AM radio host, and he's like a comedy Bang Bang character, in that he has one thing that's weird about him, which is he desperately wants AM radio to be big again. There's a great bit with, like, the news reporting on it, and it's like, we would love to show you footage of the stunt, but a local AM radio station has secured exclusive rights for broadcasting. So, like, there's a lot of people that are not paying attention to it because of that.
Yeah.
But then doing the stunt, you hear him, like, broadcasting, and he eventually just goes, like, this has to be seen to believed.
Yeah, and when he says that, it specifically cuts to the Powells, who are listening over the radio. Yeah. So, to, like, emphasize the whole, you know, oh, this has to be seen to be believed, folks. Cut to not watching.
Yeah, nobody can see it.
I also love when he is introduced. He's explaining, you know, this will bring life back into the AM radio. You know, I hate, you know, FM and color TV. In fact, I have a tattoo here to show my thoughts on it. And he, like, lifts his shirt, and it's like the Calvin pissing tattoo, but it goes in two directions, and one's on an FM radio, one's on a TV.
Yep.
And he, like, explains in detail, like, now you may notice that it's going in two directions, which seems strange, but I personally believe that he had sex the night before. And so...
Yeah.
And, like, it's just... Oh, it's so wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a... There's some good jokes in there.
This is a pretty funny movie.
It has some pretty good jokes. It has some pretty good slapstick fails. I do also like the scene. So when they're first explaining the plan, they're like at a whiteboard, and then Dave is like, oh shit, I'm late to my part-time job at the skating rink. And so they just follow him around in the exact same pose.
Yeah.
With like Rod having his hand on his hips looking proud and ready. And then they step outside, and it's this, there's like this homeless guy who's like, so we need to separate the cans in this bag, and the cloths in this bag, and the paper in this bag. And then the Rod busts out, and he's like, what are you guys doing? And they're like, we're helping this guy. It's like, come on. And then they go back inside and finish the plan.
When Rod busts his stunt, And he's like sleeping, and it, you know, outs, like his physical body is, you know, everybody's around him and like checking his pulse. And one of the characters is like, oh God, he's probably having some kind of like really meaningful out of body experience right now. And then it, you know, cuts to him in a white room, and he walks around and he looks around. And then like he sees a person in a taco costume, and a grilled cheese comes out, and they start fighting because earlier in the movie, when Rod is going to confess to Denise, she like later asks, you know, oh, what were you going to ask? And he asks, like, doesn't he ask, like, you know, oh, yes, do you think a taco or a grilled cheese would win in a fight?
Yeah.
And the taco wins. And so when he wakes up, he looks at Denise and he's like, Denise, you were right. The taco won.
And she's just like, what? Yeah. I think overall it's both a product of its time in that it's like old but also new. There's a weird clash between like the like 80s themes and tone and mood and the like internet age humor and editing, but I think it has a very interesting position, I guess, in their career. It was, for a long time, it was the only movie they had directed until our upcoming episode, released in, like, what, 2014, 15? So for, like, 7 or so years, maybe? And, like, it's just super interesting to me, looking back at this movie. I still like it a lot. It just has a lot of interesting decisions. Like, it being this huge slapstick movie when that's not really what the trio were known for. But I think it's okay in the end.
Yeah, I think this is a movie that plays, honestly, a lot better in 2020. We're still sort of in, you know, the 80s is basically super holding on as, like, the nostalgia circuit. I can't wait till we're in the mid-2000s and we can get games that look like PS2 games. But, point being, right now we're still kind of in, like, the 80s as nostalgia circuit. And, you know, we're also getting to, like, 90s technology as nostalgia. And the comedy itself still feels very, like, there is the slapstick, which slapstick is generally always pretty funny.
Evergreen.
But, like, the constructed jokes and the constructed scenes are a lot of the time very, like, feel very modern humor. And so I think this still, like, this is a movie that I would argue is probably even funnier today than it was in 2007.
I don't know. In 2007, I was a big fan of YouTube poops, as I still am. And some parts of this feel kind of YouTube poopy.
Yeah, that, you know, that is fair, actually.
Because, you know what they say, where there's smoke, there's the Lonely Island. That's what they say.
That is what they say.
That is what they say. And you know what we say? We say thank you for listening. Hopefully this experiment turned out okay.
Yes. So please tweet at us at NetSurferPro on Twitter if, you know, you hate this experiment. You can also follow us on, you know, basically anywhere you can hear a podcast if you would like to hear more experiments like this.
Yeah, I found that I can no longer post posts on the Facebook page, which is why that hasn't been updated in a while. Facebook sucks as a person trying to run a page. So just follow us on Twitter for updates.
It's because of all the extremist content that we've been putting on.
Yeah, of course. They want to censor us. like that episode where we talked about mouth silence. That's what this is. This is mouth silence.
If you would...
If you'd like to hear more of my jokes like that are really bad, you can follow me on Twitter at MattCraigGaming, where I tweet out things I'm working on, things I'm thinking about, hot takes, quick reviews. I still think about how funny it is that in the TwiiWii anime they made Shiki walk backwards to hide her face. It's maybe the greatest thing about that anime adaptation, so that's good. You can follow me on Twitch at twitch.tv/twack. That's twitch.tv/TWAK. I stream like 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Fridays. Central time, that is. I play a lot of Binding of Isaac. I've been doing some speedruns of some puzzle games / puzzle platformers. So that's pretty cool if you want to check that out. And I've been meaning to play more Guilty Gear on stream because that's fun. But if any of that sounds interesting, check that out. And through that, you can also find a Discord server where you can get updates when I go live, as well as talk to us and other fans of our work. in the general twack-verse, I guess. The extended twack canon.
I like the version of twack that fights alongside Bobobo and Eliana.
Yeah, I don't think I want to stream Miitopia anymore, but I'll have to play it off stream.
If you would like some more extremist content, you can follow me on Twitter or on TikTok. They both have the same at. That at is Galen Wilson. That's GalenWilson. I post my hot takes and sometimes, you know, make little videos of my cat. You can find me on Twitch at Machine Gun Vampire. One of these days I might start streaming. You can also find me on YouTube at The Only Galen on YouTube. Despite not having any videos, I still am the only face that appears up when you write The Only Galen on YouTube. No, there's probably another Galen on YouTube, but I'm the only Galen on YouTube.
Right. Honestly, it's kind of self-fulfilling that if you search for The Only Galen on YouTube, you get The Only Galen on YouTube. It's a nice little option select.
Yeah.
Where if you are The Only Galen, it's correct, but even if not, then it's still your username.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Yeah.
It's circular logic?
Circular logic is a good magic card. You know what else is a good magic card? What's a good magic card? I have some on the shelf over there. Obviously, the listeners can't see it.
Let's see. Deck boxes, deck protectors, sleeves, play mats, and many more magic accessories.
Play mats? That's what I'm gonna do later. See ya!